So welcome back to our fourth evening of the intro class, Introduction to Mindfulness. What we're trying to do here is to give you some sense of how you can apply or open up your awareness to include all aspects of your life, so that your awareness can help you help you be freer, more relaxed, more at ease, more at peace with whatever your experience is. And that as you become more attentive and more peaceful, more non-reactive to what's going on, you'll also hopefully have access to deeper sources of wisdom, of understanding inside of yourself. So the first evening, the primary focus was posture and breathing, using that as a foundation for practice. The second evening, we talked about the importance of embodiment, of connecting to our body, being present for us in our body. Last week, we talked about mindfulness of emotions. And this evening, the topic really mindfulness of thinking. And thinking is a hugely important part of human life. It's inconceivable to have life without thinking. And however, thinking is both an amazing blessing and an amazing curse. Tremendous amount of good comes out of what we think. A lot of creativity, a lot of beautiful things, a lot of helpful things in the world. And also a tremendous amount of awful things that are just tremendous tragedies that have their origins in how we think and what we think. There's a story in the ancient Chinese Zen tradition of a painter who was very close up against his canvas painting a realistic dragon. And so he was involved in his dragon. Then he stepped back to get a distant view of this dragon. And so he kind of saw it a little bit, a few steps back for the first time. And it frightened him, so he ran away. So the idea that we can create dragons in our own mind, and we can start to enter into a relationship with these pictures that the mind creates, these images, these ideas that the mind has, stories that the mind makes. And it's not uncommon that when people are reacting to their experience of life, they're not actually reacting to life itself, but they're reacting to the story they make about their experience. They're reacting to the perception about what the experience is. And one of the ways that's seen, it's fairly well known in the world of psychology and studies of the mind, is that cognitive science, is that memories are not very accurate. That memories can shift and change over time. They're quite malleable. Whereas people often think that their memories are accurate, but they can also often, what they've studied, they found they actually shift and change. The fish gets bigger with every telling. And so a variety of things shift and change. And however, we sometimes will believe those stories that the mind makes, the memories, the stories of memories. And then people make stories about the future. And there's images, ideas of what's in store in the future, what's going to happen in the future. And I know in my life, I've spent a lot of time worrying, anxiously planning for a future that never happened. And periodically I've realized it and said, what a waste of time. I mean, it's one thing if it happened, if I was a really good predictor of the future, right? And said, okay, this makes sense, I'll plan it, But one of the ways it's helped me kind of be more relaxed about the future is seeing over and over and over again that the thoughts, the ideas I had of what was happening in the future seldom happened the way I thought it was going to happen. And so I had enough experiences like this. I don't know how many enough was. 52,000. I kind of thought, oh, wait a minute, I got the message finally. Oh, these are stories my mind is making. Imaginary stories of what's in store in the future. It's just, it's one of many possible outcomes, many possible situations. And I can hold it lighter. I don't have to get kind of wrap myself up and get anxious about it. So the mind makes stories paints dragons, and then we don't realize they're stories, and we think they have some reality to it, and then we get caught up in that world of story making. And it's remarkable how much of human life is made up of story making, of thoughts and ideas. And in fact, there's a whole school of psychology called cognitive therapy, which focuses primarily, I think, on our thinking, what we think about, our beliefs, our values, our ideas. And there's now mindfulness-based cognitive therapy, where they use mindfulness to actually look at our thinking, what's going on in our thinking, because it's such a significant aspect of human life. So that's what we're going to do today. We're going to look a little bit at thinking, and we're also going to look at how to bring mindfulness to this world of thinking. And before we do our first meditation, I want to say very clearly that people often associate meditation with somehow it's an imaginary ideal of meditation, that your thinking mind is supposed to stop thinking when you meditate. That meditation is supposed to lead to a very quiet, serene mind with no thinking at all. And one of the reasons for this idea is that often our thinking mind is rather a nuisance when we meditate. And people don't like to have a nuisance. They want to kind of, be free of it. And also because some people have some idealistic idea of still, placid, lucid mind that has no thinking in it is some kind of ideal. Mindfulness meditation is not about having a still, quiet mind, empty mind, empty of thoughts. That can happen when you meditate, and it's nice when it does. But that's not the point. The point of mindfulness is not to have a different kind of experience, but rather to see your experience in a new way. So not about some special experience. It's about seeing what's going on in a special way. That makes sense, the difference? So if you get caught up in the idea, this shouldn't be happening, or this is good, this is good, this is happening, either wanting what's happening or not wanting what's happening or wanting something else, that's all about experience, trying to change your experience. The depth of spirituality that's available through mindfulness unfolds best if we're not focusing on changing our experience, but more on seeing it in a new way, in a way that lets us be free of it. So we don't get frightened of the dragon, but we don't have to get rid of the dragon. So in regard to thinking, it's best not to have the idea that you're trying to stop thinking when you meditate. Just trying to look at the thinking world in a different way so the thinking doesn't plague you, doesn't bother you. It's not a nuisance. So it's not so much that thinking stops, but your relationship to it can change. One of the best pieces of advice I received about thinking during meditation was a simple instruction: don't be bothered by your thinking. That's easier said than done, but don't be bothered by it, because to be bothered by anything in meditation is to agitate the mind. And so if we're trying to unagitate the mind and let the mind see clearly and be settled, then don't be bothered by anything. And so that's one of the secrets, is don't be bothered by anything. That's why you're here, right? Some of us. So with that, let's start with meditation. So take a comfortable but alert posture and gently close your eyes. And it can be helpful to take a few long, slow, deep breaths as you breathe in deeply to feel your inside of your rib cage stretch, expand. And as you exhale, to feel your rib cage, your shoulders, your belly soften. Letting your breathing return to normal. It's important to know that in mindfulness meditation, we're not trying to breathe in any special way. We're not trying to do some kind of yogic breathing. Just whatever way it's easy to breathe. And to whatever degree it's possible, set yourself at ease. Set yourself at ease in your body. If you're uneasy in your body, be easy with that. Ease up on it. See if you can let yourself be at ease in your mind. If you're uneasy some way in your mind, be easy with that. And then let yourself be at ease in your heart with your feelings. So the idea is to be here, connected to your body, here and now. So you might feel as much as you can, kind of a global awareness of your body. Open, aware of the sensations, feelings and energies as they show themselves in your body. And then within your body, as part of your body, become aware of how your body experiences breathing. And as you feel the experience of breathing in your body, make some room, some space in your body to feel the physicality, the sensations of breathing, the expansion and contraction, the movements. And then hang in there with the experience of breathing, as if the breathing are waves washing up and down onto the shore. So the alternation of breathing in and out within the body are like waves in the body. Be relaxed with how you're breathing. Let the breath breathe itself. When the mind wanders off in thought, notice that you're doing that. Notice in a relaxed way. And then letting go of your thoughts, your thinking, begin again with your breathing. So then, let go of paying attention to your breathing, and instead, let your attention look directly at the experience of thinking. Almost as if you're listening to someone else talk and you're really present to listen. Listen to yourself think, be present. Look thinking straight on. Be clearly aware that you're thinking. If thinking disappears, then you can go back to your breathing. But as soon as it comes back, just bring awareness to sense, to feel, to see your thinking. Is there a lot of energy in thinking, or is thinking very soft, a whisper? As you watch your thinking, is your mind really interested in what you're thinking about, or is there very little interest? Are your thoughts insistent? Or your thoughts relaxed? And as you're aware of thinking, if it's happening at all, is there any tension or pressure, physical tension or physical pressure, that's associated with thinking? Any tension associated with thinking? And if there is, see if you can soften a little bit around it. Relax the thinking muscle. And then as you notice your thinking, very gently, softly, name that experience with a simple label, thinking. And as you say thinking in your mind, see if you can find yourself a little bit independent of your thinking, a little bit watching it rather than caught in it. And then for the last couple of minutes of the sitting, come back again to your breathing and enter into the world of inhaling and exhaling, letting go of your thoughts as much as you can, let them recede to the background. And in the foreground of attention, stay with your breathing. So imagine yourself taking a nice hike on a nice day. You come to the edge of a river, beautiful place in the shade of the oak tree. Sit down, you have a nice lunch, maybe take a nice nap. You wake up contented, happy, peaceful. You look around, great blue sky, great vista, beautiful, peaceful river to watch. No problems at all in the world at all. Just there watching the river go by. And occasionally some boats come by and just watch them float down. Look, there's a boat. Boat floats down. Very nice. And then one of those big, flashy river boats, show boats, comes along. You see it coming. And the next thing you know, you're on the boat going down the river in the show boat. Being with the show. And somehow you manage to get back on shore and back up on the riverbank, resting there under the oak tree again. And now comes a battleship. And you get on the battleship. And that takes you for a long trip, many, many miles downriver, shooting rounds left and right to imaginary boats. And then you get back on the shore, and then now this impoverished raft comes along. Just you, barely hanging on for dear life, all alone, abandoned by the world, lost, nowhere to go, just kind of barely out of the water. You get off that boat, back up in the bank, lay down under the tree, and then your high school reunion boat comes along. So there are a lot of boats. And what happens is we get on the boats. And sometimes we go on these boats and spend years and decades on particular boats. And this is an analogy for our thinking mind. The mind produces thoughts. The river of the mind produces various thoughts. And it's possible to stay on the riverbank, stay dry, safe, relaxed, at ease, and just watch the thoughts come by. And it's possible to get onto the boat and get carried along for a long time. And from the point of view of people who do meditation practice, the idea, most people, most of the time, are on their boats. But that's not the only place to be. You know, there's a whole world to live in besides the boat. And you can be safe on the riverbank where it's dry and nice and just be relaxed and just watch the boats go by. And for some people, this is a very foreign idea, because the world we're thinking, for some people, seems very, very important. Some people, kind of basically identify their thinking mind with who they are. They don't think, then they don't exist. You know, so somehow they prop themselves up, they figure out who they are, they tell themselves stories of who we are through our thinking. And it's inconceivable not to be something, as the way that our thoughts tell us. Our thoughts, our thinking sometimes puts us in relationship to other people. What we like, what we don't like, who we don't like, who we're for, who we're against, you know, all this stuff in a relationship is mediated through our thinking, our analysis, our evaluation of the situation. And if we stop doing that, if we stop living on that boat, the evaluation, comparative world, thinking boat, then, well, who am I if I'm not establishing myself in relationship to someone else? Who am I? It's very frightening for some people. It's possible to be on the edge of the river, resting under the oak tree, without evaluating yourself in comparison to anything, anybody, without telling you a story about who you are and what you like and all these things. Just be there, kind of relaxed. So what's very interesting is the way that people relate to the world of thinking. And thinking, some people think in words, some people think more in images. But the world of inner ideas, stories, imaginations that we have, and how do we relate to it? Some people relate to our thinking as if it's the main show in town. Everything happens through the world of thinking. Some people relate to it as if every thought we have is believable, you know, has authority. And one of the things that I was told that was useful to me early on when I meditated was someone said, you don't have to believe all your thoughts. What? That was a strange idea. I thought, you know, somehow, you know, someone with a very good mind was in there. You know, I don't know where they came from, those thoughts, but, you know, I was thinking it, and therefore they had some kind of truth to them. So how we relate to them? Some people are very interested in them. Some people are horrified by the thoughts. Some people are constantly kind of being battered around by them and feel obsessed, oppressed by their thinking and just wish that they can go away, or kind of running away, reacting to their thinking all the time. There's often people in a relationship to the world of thinking. And that relationship often feeds the thinking process. Thinking is something that's fueled. So say it this way. The human mind naturally produces thoughts. It's a thought, partly a thought-making organ. Just kind of pumps out thoughts. If we react to the thought, pick up the thought, and get involved in the chain of associated thinking connected to it, then we start thinking. Thinking is taking a thought and doing something with it, having further thoughts about it, analyzing it, you know, making bigger stories, spinning tales, whatever. The thinking is something is not necessarily something the mind has to always do. The thinking is something that's fueled and fed by our interest, our involvement, our preoccupation, our being bothered by it, our reaction to it. So all the stuff that we do feeds the process of thinking. It's possible just to watch a thought arise and it fades away. It comes, bubbles up, it's there. The boat comes on the river, and you watch the boat float down without getting on. It's possible not to be in relationship to your thinking beyond just your thoughts without just watching them happen as they go by. One of the reasons why we do this in meditation is that it's very relaxing not to be living in relationship in reaction to our thinking. A lot of the stress that people have arises in good part because of the way we think about things. And the way we think about things is not just a neutral thing. We're involved with our thinking. So if we can stop being involved in our thinking so tightly, so close, then there's a lot more ease about what's going on. I think many people's minds are crowded. And they're crowded with thoughts. The epitome of the human condition is a traffic jam of discursive thinking. It's really crowded. And part of the function of meditation, one of the things it can do, this new way of seeing in meditation, is to open up the vista of the mind. So there's lots of space in the mind. We can watch the thinking, if thinking is predominant, rather than being caught in it, or riding it, or being pushed around by it. So it's very liberating. It's also very, maybe it's an overused word, but very empowering. Because if you're not living caught in the world of thinking, it gives you a different vantage point to make decisions and choices in your life that are hard to make if you're caught in the crowded mind, the claustrophobic kind of thinking, always thinking about things. For one thing, it allows for creativity, intuition, other sources of understanding to bubble up that can't bubble up if we're only living in the world of the thoughts themselves. And the thinking world has this wonderful camouflage, this wonderful logic to it, where the thinking mind seems to tell itself, some people, I have to, thinking is where I'm going to solve my life. So let's just think more. And as we think more, we actually get a little more alienated from ourselves. And then we feel more off, so then we try to think even more. And some people have this spiral out, where they actually lose touch with themselves because they're living more and more and more in the world of story making, of thinking and ideas. So part of the function of meditation is to open the vista and not be caught in that relationship, but just to see it, to be in the river and just watch. So when we did this last meditation, in the last 10 minutes or so, I asked you to let go of your breathing and just focus on looking at your thinking directly. It's very different than some people are struggling with their thinking, trying to stop thinking so they can be with the breath. It's so hard, this thinking keeps getting in the way. And then suddenly, what? It's okay to think? Are you supposed to look at it? So what happened to some of you when you did that? I'm curious to hear. Yes, please, please use the microphone, that's helpful.
I'm a very avid tennis player, basically daily, and very competitive, and competing. And it seems like in the meditation, when I do the breath and get down lower and lower and lower, my muscles relax so enormously that they fire. And I woke up 3 times here. Once I was hitting a serve. Literally, I saw the whole thing. I knew where to hit the line, and that happens at home in bed too. I might eat my partner. So it's. I don't see it negative, maybe for the meditation, but it's the muscles just recover and heal and
release. Yes.
Relax. That's so, but how do you have any input about that? Just let it be.
Well, yeah, I don't know. Particularly for you, what's going on? But I do know that. As we do relax, some people relax, this happened to me, relaxing, some of the stored up tension in the system can release. Some people describe it as release of energy. And some of that releasing can happen very suddenly. And I've had the experience of suddenly having my arm fly up in meditation.
Right.
Both arms like this. And both arms and both legs sitting in meditation, I kind of was like, almost like flew off the cushion. And it's involuntary. Completely involuntary. It's just kind of sudden release or discharge. And some people have it as they're falling asleep at night as well. Maybe you don't know it, but maybe your partner's, see the twitching and. So I consider it to be a healthy thing. It's healthy to have this discharge and letting go.
Yeah.
And one of the nice things about meditation is that some of the buildup of tension, of pressure, of energy, and stuff that happens in the course of the day, some of the momentum of the day, has a chance to unwind. And it's really helpful to unwind in a deep way. And meditation is one of the ways to unwind. Once you get good at meditation, to unwind in some really, really deep way. That's, you know, in some ways better than running or...
Than what?
Better than running or taking a shower or other ways that people are watching television or something like that. But I was curious about what happened when you looked at your thinking. Unless none of you thought.
Hi.
Yes.
I always like to meditate in the morning better than the evening, and I'm finding that I'm tired, sloth and torpor, and the texture of my thinking was very woolly. It was soft. It wasn't sharp and precise.
Yeah. Great.
Yeah.
That's very nice.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm over here, y'all. I have a really busy mind, and so I don't think I was meditating before, but I've often really directed my thoughts. I've learned how to sort of just try and have one thought. So it was very interesting that I often will get into a mantra out of habit, like just try and have one thought. So when you actually said, you know, now just watch your thoughts, it was very funny that all of a sudden everything just went blank. It was like, well, come on, I'm waiting for the thought. And it was almost like I was forcing it. Because I was ready to watch what I would think without directing. And without me directing it, there was nothing. And it was, I thought to myself, okay, nothing.
How many had the experience of when you actually looked at your thoughts, the thoughts kind of got shy or disappeared? It's a lot of you. And then how long did it take before thoughts did creep back?
3 seconds.
3 seconds? Pretty quickly. And So this is a very important thing to know. Some people have this experience. Once you kind of look directly at thinking, are clearly mindful of it, it tends to sometimes dissipates and goes away. One of the reasons for that is that when you're just being aware of it, you stop feeding it. And the thinking continues through time because it's being fed. You're in relationship to it. You're involved with it. And being mindful of it is not the same thing as being involved in it. Make sense? So you stop the involvement. And so the fuel is not there, and so it dissipates. So that can happen sometimes. Yes?
My thinking is normally obsessing about work or something, so it's kind of makes sense to me. And then after you said that and my thoughts went away and I relaxed, I had like this memory of when I was 12 years old, a parking lot in Connecticut with a Barnes & Noble. And it was just totally strange. And so then I started obsessing about, why am I thinking about that? And what's that? And so I don't know if that's normal or odd or how our brains, but, you know, my mind just went, ooh, so why am I there? What happened then? You know, and get kind of into that and then tried to focus on the breathing. But
So what's really important in the mindfulness meditation is when a thought like that arises, the Barnes & Noble thought arises, is to notice that in addition to the thinking happening, there's also this intense interest. And so you want to also be mindful, oh, there's that interest. And you can even make a label, interest. Because if you don't really clearly recognize there's interest and see it from the riverbank, the interest is going to direct the show. And you get pulled into the world of thinking because you don't have an acknowledgement. But if you step back, see, oh, there's also intense interest here. Let me just feel and notice the interest. Then you're not feeding the interest. Now, as the mind relaxes, and the surface, you kind of drop below the surface mind, there's a variety of different things that can pop up that have been long been buried or long been unnoticed. And especially for people who are, you know, relatively new in meditation, the first, you know, the first few years, it's not uncommon to have long forgotten memories pop up. And sometimes those memories are kind of unfortunate memories, and sometimes they're very beautiful memories that are long forgotten. Some beautiful memories of childhood can surface again. It's like reclaiming some beautiful quality that we've lost touch with. And it's generally considered quite healthy to allow, like the release of the energy in the muscles, it's quite healthy to allow these memories to come. Even though we say be here now in meditation, just be in the present, that the dislodging and freeing of these memories is very helpful. But what we need to do when we meditate is then not get on the memory boat. Okay. Just let that boat go by. And that can be sometimes hard. Say, oh, that's good that the memory arose. That's good. Meditation's doing its job. Now, let's not stop meditating by getting on the boat.
So, are stories the same as thoughts? I mean, as thinking?
No.
I find myself, I have incredible stories. They've never happened. But that's, when you're saying that, I'm not thinking about anything reality-based, so it's a little disconcerting.
I guess the story-making is a subcategory of thinking. You know, thinking is quite wide, you know. You can do, there's thinking which is not story-making, I suppose. I mean, you can come up with a shopping list. And that's kind of, I guess maybe it's a kind of story. The story of what I'm going to buy. But, and so do any of you notice when any tension or pressure or in your system that seems to be connected to thinking? Anybody want to say something? Yes, you.
So one thing I wanted to ask is, when you said thinking, I was thinking about my bottom hurting, which has been happening the last couple of days in meditation. It was very comfortable the first few weeks. Now it's become very uncomfortable. So I tried saying, okay, just naming it pain, hard, and then I tried to associate an emotion behind it. And you know, you were talking about thoughts, and I'm like, oh, here I go, going to emotions. But I realized what I'm struggling with right now is just letting that pain boat go by.
You were struggling with what?
Letting the pain boat go by. You know, like instead of adding a story, yeah. Like, you know, damn it, why are you
right.
in pain? What, you know, why can't you concentrate and things mm-hmm. like that? Instead of adding a story to it, I'm just kind of trying to name it. Mm-hmm. But sometimes that physical sensation of something becomes so powerful for me that it's really hard to just stay with. Right. Then I get lost. Like, what do I do now?
Good, good. So there's an opportunity with strong, uncomfortable sensations in meditation. And it's up to you whether you feel it's wise or appropriate to explore that opportunity. So one opportunity is that you can learn a lot about yourself in relationship to discomfort. There's a lot of we enter into a relationship with pain. There can be fear, there can be aversion, there can be resistance, there can be agitation, there can be sloth and torpor, shutting down. There can be beliefs that come into play, strong, intense beliefs. The belief that in order to be a successful human being, I'm supposed to always be comfortable. And if I'm uncomfortable, it means I'm a failure as a human. There's a lot, many, many kind of beliefs that come into play. There can be self-images that come into play. There can be projections of the future that come into play. So there's a whole kind of constellation of things that come into play around that pain. And so one of the opportunities was hanging out with pain is you begin to look at that whole package that comes along with it and sort it out and begin settling away the kind of stuff that's not really necessary, that's extra. And as you know, I think that's pretty well known now, that some percentage of most pain has a psychological component. It has to do with our stories and beliefs and ideas we have and our reactions and relationships. So some pains get a lot easier to be with when we can actually can kind of separate out all this extra stuff that's crowding in and making it harder. So if you're interested in doing that work, of taking the opportunity, going in there and exploring that terrain, then it requires being willing to stay uncomfortable for a while. And if you're not interested in learning that, then change your posture. But if you hang in there with it, there's a tremendous amount of learning that can happen. But more important from our point of view, freedom that can happen, freeing that can happen, as we kind of don't get caught just in that web of the thoughts, beliefs, reactions, and feelings that can go on.
Like the one thing I was noticing is I was able to name like fear and anger as that was happening. And then what I did is I said, come on, come over here, have lunch with my daughter and I.
Good.
And then it just got less. And I thought that was really interesting.
Very beautiful. So to be inviting or accepting, make space for these things. Nothing has to go away. You just have to kind of make space and see it more clearly. And kind of lighten up, and then we're not feeding it, and things can be a lot easier. Now, one of the boats that can go by, like with pain, is the boat that says, this has to go away. And then we get on that boat. Or the boat that says, this is supposed to go away quickly. And then we're on that boat. It might actually not go away. You know, the river might be really slow today. And the pain just, you know, it hardly moves. There's no current, you know. And, it's, you know, it's your job is just stay there and note, be aware. Your job is not to judge the river for how quickly it moves the boat down. So anybody see any, in a thinking mind, like a thinking muscle, feel any pressure or tension anywhere at all? Yes?
Specific question to that. For the longest time, I would find a correlation whenever I'd go into thought, into story. It could just be walking down the street, minding my own business. My shoulders would tense up. And I'd notice, I'd come to present, I'd go down, and then after a while, I'd go into story, and my shoulders would get tense and go up. It's the damnedest thing. It happened for so long that it finally dissipated, where I don't go into story so much, and my
Great.
Shoulders don't. But it's an interesting correlation.
Yeah, so that's correlation. Any place else that people have noticed a correlation? Yeah.
I felt it in my back,
mm-hmm.
and then I focused on it, and it dissipated after a while.
And when it dissipated in your back, were you less inclined to go off in thought?
No, I don't know. I don't know what the answer to that is.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else notice anything? Please, here. Where's the mic? Sir?
I had a lot of different things going on today.
No. I can.
Oh, okay. I had a lot of different thoughts going on, but then I focused on my breathing, and then when I looked at my thoughts, they did dissipate. But I had real intense on both sides, like stinging and tingling to the point where I was like, wow, that's interesting. And I have that sometimes when I'm meditating, that it's almost, I don't know whether it's fighting against me relaxing, or it's like the brain is running, but I'm trying not to look at it or something. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Both
Could
sides.
Be. Uh-huh. Could be. So one more here.
It was similar for me. My shoulders would get tight. I would also notice it's more kind of a triangle. It goes from my shoulders to the front of my head. And it's almost like the problem is like right in front of my face, and I'm trying to analyze it. I noticed that. One other thing I noticed is it's very clear that I'm looking at the boats or I'm on a boat. When I'm looking at the boats move very slowly. When I get on a boat, it's almost always a speedboat. And it seems like a switch, and I wonder if there's a way to get on a boat and not have it speeding all the time.
There might be, but the way to find that is to begin exploring, being mindful of what a speedy boat feels like. Get to know it better. And this is kind of like the mantra almost in our tradition, is whatever's troubling you, the task is get to know it better, understand it better, see it better. So get to be like a connoisseur of speedy thinking. And feel what it looks like. It feels like the contracted face and and feel the energy and all that. And as you get to know it better and further the whole phenomena, you'll probably find yourself freer of it. You try to let go of it before understanding it, it might not really work. So there's a lot of physical correlation. It's said that every thought that you have, every thinking process you have, will have some kind of physical manifestation or correlation. Something physical happens. Thinking, you know, in a sense, the words that we think are kind of disembodied. You know, what are they? But the thinking itself, the process of thinking, has its tentacles that spread out into the body and actually have a lot of effect in many different areas of our body. And so some people feel it in the shoulders, some people in the back. Depending on the kind of thinking and the emotions connected to it, it might be the stomach. Sometimes I've noticed that I can be very calm, very settled, very grounded in my body, for example, in meditation, very centered. I feel like my center of gravity is low, my center of presence, my energy is kind of low and feels really good and stable. And then I'll have a really juicy boat, really good boat. And I get, you know, pulled onto it. And then I notice that my energy, that grounded energy, goes up. Up, kind of like it lifts up here towards my head. And I feel much more unstable. It's kind of like I'm kind of agitated. Kind of up, the energy, aliveness, the vitality kind of goes up like that. Sometimes I can experience pressure or tension around my eyes and my forehead. Sometimes there's a sense of pressure inside my skull, almost like there's a muscle in there that's tense or tight or you know, has pressure connected to it that seems connected to certain kinds of thinking I have. Sometimes it spreads down into my hands and my arms. There's a variety of places that, physically, that thinking manifests, that participates in the process of thinking. And you can see it certainly sometimes in other people. You can see kind of, you know, their thinking and their eyes kind of furrow up and eyebrows furrow up and or their jaws get kind of clenched or tight or they pucker up or, you know, there's a variety of things people might do in thinking about and getting involved in the world of thinking. Now, the reason why this is important to notice is that if you let go of the content of what you're thinking, if you let go of the thoughts, but your shoulders stay up, or the pressure is there, you're all contracted, you know, or the pressure in your skull is still there pushing, that physical pressure or tension is like a factory that's going to pump out more thoughts. But if you can relax that part of your body, then you're less likely to get involved in those thoughts again. So, you know, so when you find your mind wandering off in thought a lot, study that. Bring your mindfulness to that. And then notice, is there any kind of, any physical correlation that's connected to, any physical sensations connected to the thinking that's possible to soften and relax? Sometimes people can relax, it's almost like the brain is a thinking muscle. It's almost like relax that thinking muscle, like you would relax, you know, your shoulder. And then once you do that, then it might be easier to then come back and stay with your breath. So there's a variety of intensities to thinking. And some thoughts are really, there's almost no energy or juice behind them at all. And, you know, you notice you're thinking, you let go of it, you can go back to the breath and stay there. And some little hint of a thought comes up and you just kind of brush it aside and stay with your breath. Fine. Some thinkings are much more energy behind it. And so, you know, you can't just let go of it so easily. But if you turn your attention and kind of just face it directly, look it in the eye, thinking, I see you, I'm really here for you, then sometimes it just fades away, like some of you reported. Sometimes when we're really caught by the thought, there's a lot of momentum or energy behind thinking, you know, we can't expect just to turn it off like that or it turns off so quickly. So then the task is to bring the attention to the thinking phenomena, the event of thinking, and bring careful mindfulness, to hold it in awareness. You can very quietly name it, thinking, thinking, or planning, 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 remembering, remembering, fantasizing, whatever it might be. And the naming will help you maybe be a little bit more detached from it. And then get to know the phenomena, explore it, get to know the energy of it, the emotions connected to it, the physical qualities of it, and whatever you can, just open yourself up to experience the phenomena of thinking as if it has permission to be there. Get to know it. Now, one of the things about thoughts that are very persistent, either keep reoccurring quite a bit or just don't want to go away, is often then there's a very strong emotional component to it. The emotions are kind of feeding it. So I've noticed that many people who, often when people spend a lot of time planning, the fuel for the planning is anxiety or some kind of fear, apprehension. And so you can let go of your plannings as much as you want, but if the apprehension is still there, it'll just keep pumping out new plans. But if you turn your attention and do mindfulness of emotions with the anxiety, then it's possible to settle in enough that there's no more need to have more plans. It's almost like the planning is like a flag that says, hey, you, over here, pay attention here. And then we look at the flag. But what we're really supposed to do is to look at the anxiety. That's really what's in real time. Or if there's a lot of looking in the past, a lot of thinking about the past, there might be some underlying feeling of regret or hurt that needs to be addressed or looked at. So sometimes if it's very strong thinking, very repetitive, it's helpful to drop into the emotion, do mindfulness of emotion. Sometimes it's just physical and you drop into the body and feel the physicality of it and you can soften a little bit and that can help be less caught in the world of thinking. So the basic idea in mindfulness meditation is when we sit down to meditate, we have the breathing as a center of gravity. We have the breathing as the kind of the home base. We keep coming back there, we be there as best we can, we give it some emphasis. So there's some emphasis given to the breath, but it's not a strong one, because as soon as something else becomes compelling, if there's a strong sensation in the body, we let go of the breathing, and then we do mindfulness of that sensation. And we meditate on that sensation for however long it's there. That's the way I talked about the second week. If it's a strong emotion, we let go of the breathing and then turn the attention to really take in that emotion. Get to know that well and feel it physically, as I talked about last week. If there's strong thinking going on, if thinking is an issue, somehow interfering with your ability to be with the breath, interfering enough, then let go of the breathing and then take in thinking. Do mindfulness of thinking. And you don't have to have the idea that you're not supposed to be thinking. That's just another boat. That's just another thought. The idea is, this is what's happening now. It's a lot of thinking. It's relaxed. Okay, if this is what's happening, I'm supposed to be present for what's happening. This is what's happening. So now let me do mindfulness of thinking. So you can name it gently. Just stay present for it. You can explore it, get to know it. But the trick about thinking, mindfulness of it, mindfulness of thinking is not thinking about thinking. So it isn't that we're supposed to, we're not thinking about what's going on. It's more like a silent awareness, non-discursive awareness. And so the content of what you're thinking, the theme of what you're thinking about, has almost, we could say, no importance from the point of view of meditation. Almost no importance. So the fact that what, you know, the details of what you're thinking about is not so important. But we tend to be kind of often caught by the words or the images. What we're interested in mindfulness is what the event of thinking is like, the process of thinking. And thinking is more than just having words or images. Thinking is physical, it's energetic, it's emotional. Thinking also involves a relationship we have to the thinking. We're interested, we're resistant, you know, kind of all these things, relationship, all these things. So we can begin exploring all these things. But the exploration itself, hopefully, is relaxed. Easy. Be easy. If you're exploring, try to get to the bottom of it, explore in order to fix something, you're on a boat. You know, you left the riverbank. The idea is just stay on your riverbank under the oak tree and just, okay, now it's my time to look at the phenomenon of thinking. Let's get to know it. Yes?
In the observation, aren't you thinking in the sense that you're observing it and then you're exploring it, but you're exploring it with your mind, with your thinking?
There might be some very rudimentary, very simple kind of thinking going on that kind of directs the mind to look at, but looking at, you know, now it's time to look at the thoughts. However, it's very, very rudimentary, very kind of basic level of thinking. It's very different than the higher level thinking that involves writing the great American novel or, you know, having the great American fantasy or, you know, the great American shopping list.
I know there's a difference between getting on the boat and exploring the actual thinking versus observing it and picking it apart or really trying to understand it or trying to explore.
Yes, yeah, so it's basically more a silent awareness. It's kind of like,
you know,
yeah, it's not. So we're not trying to. The direction we're going here is not discursive thinking. There might be some very simple thinking, very, very simple, innocent thinking that says, "Oh, there's my knee hurts, So, okay, let me turn my attention to the knee. That's kind of helping you with the process of being present. It's not taking you away. And if it's really simple, like, oh, let's look at the knee, that's fine, that's innocent, it's not getting in the way. And some people don't even recognize that kind of thought as thinking. And it just seems like it's kind of intuitive or just, you know, non-discursive. So there might be some very, very simple rudimentary kind of thinking going on here for a while. And as the mind gets more and more still in meditation, then even that rudimentary kind of thinking can fall away until that's not needed anymore either. But it might be, you know, if the mind is really active, you know, then there is a little bit kind of quiet. It's like sandpaper. You know, you have to use finer and finer sandpaper. So, you know, use finer and finer level degrees of thinking to find, you know, to it's all smoothed out. Does that make sense? Enough? So we're not thinking about things. This is a very important. So we're not actively thinking about it. And some people confuse mindfulness with thinking. So it's, you know, the difference between looking at a sunset or listening to music maybe is good. And just kind of taking in the experience of the music, the vibration in the ears and the body and the, you know, the rhythm and every, you know, the whole thing, taking it in versus thinking about the music we're hearing. Oh, that's a B flat, that's a minor key, that's, you know.
Getting on the boat. But the point that I don't quite get the distinction is, so I start thinking about a relationship. And so I can then watch the thinking just go by. But then you said, but I can explore it.
Yes.
So it's in the exploration that I think, well, do I say, well, my thoughts say, I mean, I like this person, I don't like this person, this person did something to me, I don't like this person. So is that what you don't do?
Yeah.
Because what is it that you do with thinking about this person? Mm-hmm.
So that kind of process could be helpful in some parts of our life. And some people call that analysis, like psychoanalysis. And that's actively, that's thinking about things which are not actively present right here. What we're interested in is to be present for what is here and now. And here and now you're thinking about some difficult relationship. And so what is it like to be involved in those kinds of thoughts? Oh, there's anxiety. Anxiety is in the present moment. There's fear about those kinds of thoughts. There's intense interest. There's a lot of pressure built up in my chest around this. And just here and now, in the real time, what is now? Because in real time, here and now, that relationship, in a certain way, belongs to virtual reality. And it might be real. The person might still be alive. The person's over there in Palo Alto in your Redwood City. And so, you know, and the person's, you know, in here, at this particular time, the person is alive, you know, in a few cities south of us, so it's real in that way. But it's, you know, our thoughts and imaginations of that person and that relationship, it's kind of a virtual reality. And so what we're trying to do is step back from the virtual world to the actual world. And the actual world is that here is a person who's thinking a lot about a relationship, so thinking. Here's a person who's intensely involved in a relationship, so feeling the intensity. Here's a person who feels that the relationship's going to save my life. I need to be in a relationship, or here's a person concerned about being liked. So he can feel these things in real time, but then to go, oh, you know, when that person said X, then I didn't quite feel good about that, and, you know, and that's probably why I'm feeling bad now, because, you know, all this because, the whys and all that, there's no need for that. Make sense? Keep it really simple. Yes, please. Oh, the mic, please. Thank you.
So is the mindfulness about what's about right now, is that in the insight that is what? How is insight in Vipassana meditation defined?
Okay, so how is insight? So we're the Insight Meditation Center. mindfulness is the process of paying attention. And as we pay attention, we start seeing more clearly what is here. And that seeing is called the insight. So the mindfulness is the process of paying attention, what we see, but not just anything. But So insight in Western psychology is often understanding why we tick the way we do psychologically. Many people think, oh, I didn't realize there was so much fear. I didn't realize there was so much fear all the time, and that's what's propelling all my concerns. Wow, that's great. I have this insight into how I work. I see all this fear. So that's a psychological insight. The insight that of Buddhism is not an insight that's particular to your particular biography, your particular autobiography, your life story. But the insight in Buddhism is insight into deep structures of human psyche, how human mind, or into universal characteristics of human experience. And to see in a very, to be able to have the stillness and the depth of mindfulness to start seeing at a very deep level in the psyche or in the mind or something, what's universally true about all of us. And as we see that those universal insights, not the particular insights that are true for you as an individual, but that which is true for everyone, those insights are in Buddhism are said to be liberating, to free us.
In the meantime, the psychological insights, that the patterns that might arise that start with something that's in the moment,
right,
can be very seductive.
Oh, they're good. They're boats that come with big billboards. And
right. And so, and that psychological insight can also feel powerful.
Yes, it can be. And they're important. Those psychological insights are very important. We expect it to come along. It's an important part of this. And you have to have some wisdom. Sometimes it's important to spend some time looking at that. Sometimes something will come up in meditation and they'll spend some time in therapy around that. They'll go into it and do the analysis of it because it seems like, wow, this is a big deal. And let me go look at it. It's best not to do analysis on the cushion when you meditate. And just like the story I said earlier with the memories coming up, it's healthy to have these memories kind of dislodge and come to the surface. It's healthy to have insights come up. But just like with the memories, you know, we just let the boat go by. We don't get involved. We let the insights come up, and then we don't get involved. We let them go by. And what you might find, one of the boats you get involved on is, I'll forget it. I have to kind of remember it. You know, that's another boat. And then when you have that boat, you say, oh, look at that. The afraid I'll forget boat. And you note that. You wear that. Look at that. Everything is just boats. And ultimately, what we find out is even the riverbank's a boat. So there are all kinds of very significant things that can happen in meditation that can be very seductive, was your word. And the image I like to give people to kind of prevent them from being seduced by these things is that. Say that you're trying to go to the 10th floor of a 10th floor apartment building. So you take the elevator, and it opens on the second floor, and the second floor is spectacular. It's just amazing. You've never seen a second floor so beautiful. It's so interesting and creatively done, and so, you know, promising, and offers to solve all your life problems. And so you get off on the second floor. Now, this beautiful elevator was what brought you to the second floor. So that's really great. But then you left the elevator, you left the process that brought you to the second floor, and you got sidetracked on the second floor. What we say in meditation world is, trust the elevator. Stay on the elevator, because it has better places to take you. It was really good, but it took you that far. And don't get off on the floor. Just say, be content and look at the door and say, wave to that second floor. And just stay with the mindfulness practice. Stay just noting, be aware, be present. Don't be seduced. So the world's greatest insight arises. You have a great spiritual experience. You know, good Buddhist teachers, you come to them and you say, oh, I had this fantastic experience. They'll yawn. And they'll say, well, that's good. You made it to the seventh floor, but don't get off the elevator. Just keep practicing. Keep paying attention. And maybe this is where you start seeing how freedom in Buddhism and attention are closely connected. Because the process of noticing, staying present, just noticing what's going on, is to be free of what you're noticing. and there's freedom then. But if you get on the boat, if you get caught in it, then you're not free. So if you're seduced, you're not free. So there's something about the noticing, staying aware, staying with the noting, the awareness, the mindfulness. Oh, now I know this. Now this is going on. Now this is happening. Now this is happening. Now this is happening. It's very relaxed, kind of open. Then there's something that is very freeing. There's a lot of freedom in that experience. Because that experience of just knowing, staying with the knowing, is not being on a boat. Does that make sense? So if thinking is in the background of your meditation practice, and it's easy to keep the breathing in the foreground, just for the most part, you can just ignore it. Let it be in the background. Let it do whatever it wants to do. Just ignore it, as long as you can keep the foreground of attention on the breathing. If you get lost in your thoughts, then notice that's what's going on. And notice if you have a reaction to being lost. If you get angry with yourself, oh, I'm lost again, this is really hard. You get that, this is really hard boat. Or, I'm a poor meditator boat. And there's all these boats, you know. So rather than getting on a boat, just say, oh, look at that. I was lost in thought. Hang out there for a moment and see if there's any, if the thinking muscle, some thinking, some place in the body, some pressure can be softened and relaxed. And then come back to your breathing. If the thinking doesn't let go so easily, then forget about the breathing and just look head on. Just be mindful of the thinking. Some people find it very helpful to name it. Thinking. Thinking. Or planning. Planning. Because it helps, the noting helps them stay present. So the mind doesn't get caught up in some boat thinking about something. It keeps them present. In the present moment, keeps them anchored. But it also begins to show how, in the naming of it, the naming comes from a place in the mind that's not entangled with what is known. So the idea is, can you know it in this free place? This balanced place. Oh, this is what's happening. And so then if it dissipates the thinking, then you go back to your breathing. If the breathing is much more persistent, then be content with that. Okay, now I get to do thinking meditation. And then you get to kind of hold that in awareness for a while. And we don't want to start analyzing and doing an engineering project, you know, what you said earlier about, you know, look what's all this stuff going on. Rather, you kind of stay more relaxed. Say, okay, almost like you say, let me open up to a bigger picture, a more careful picture of what's here. And then, in its own time, you start becoming aware of the physicality, the emotionality, the various things that are connected to the thinking. And then, you know, the practice goes on from there. Any questions about that? Anything? Please.
This is probably totally wrong. I like to actually sit with a pencil and paper when I meditate, because when those insights come up, or if I remember something, I know we're supposed to let it go, but it's like, yeah, but I might not remember this in 20 or 30 minutes, and I really got to make this phone call when I get done. And it, so I write that down and I come back, and then I don't have to think about it anymore.
Right.
But it's a useful thing, but it's not kind of in the tradition that
right.
You're saying one should.
No. Some people use it as a technique to kind of just put it down so they can have it, you know, so they don't have to think about it anymore. They find it useful. It's okay to do. However, if it's a regular thing you do, like you actually sit down with a piece of paper, you know, prepared, and you're regularly writing things down, then what I would encourage you to do is to, at some point, when you feel that urge to write something down, bring your attention, turn the mirror of awareness to look at that urge, to look at the fear, the anxiety, the sense of need, the sense of importance, and look at that really carefully. Because it could be that the way you relate to your juicy thoughts, your important thoughts, and wanting to save them, is actually symptomatic of some other way in which you relate to other things in life as well. And so in the laboratory of meditation, it gives you a chance to look at this phenomenon much more carefully if you don't give into it, and maybe clarify and get to the root of something. Because if what you want to do is to become free, you have to become free of even really interesting things. And it's hopefully the 10th floor is a lot more interesting, more important, and more valuable than the first floor. So even though there is a letting go of something valuable, you might lose something. You might never have that thought again. You might never know what it was. And you might lose something that was useful, but you lose something the other way as well. If you stop your meditation to write it down, you're losing the momentum of your meditation. So it's your choice. You know, and so I'd encourage you at least sometimes choose to actually stay with the meditation at all costs. And then see what it's like. Discover yourself in that process.
Hi. I think this happens with the body too.
Happens what?
It happens with the body too. There's boats that happen in the body. There was a time when I was very fidgety, and it just seemed like I could never go very far in my meditation without fidgeting. And the instruction was to sit with that and right. just feel it in the body and just feel the fidgetiness.
Right.
And it left after a while.
Beautiful. So one of the principles here is that the very thing that's making it difficult for you to meditate becomes the meditation. So one of the ideas here is that there are no distractions. It's just something else to include in your meditation. So it's very, very spacious, very inclusive. No part of who you are as a human being is excluded from this meditation. And so it's all a way of including it all and bringing it in, folding it in, composting it in. So the fidgeting, if you get impatient when you meditate, some people think, well, impatience, that's not meditation, so they kind of just let it kind of run the show. But you turn around and actually look at the impatience, become the world expert on what meditation feels like. Feel the impatience in your body, feel it in your mind, feel the energy, feel the emotions. Really ground yourself, do mindfulness of impatience. And in the process of doing that, hopefully, you either settle the impatience or you learn how to be free of it, free from it, free from being caught by it. So everything is included, everything's folded back. So one more question here.
Maybe it would be interesting for all of us if you could be so kind and share with us your personal path, where meditation has been taking you and where you want to go and how you deal with those things. Do you have these same things or do you have mastered them or is there grading? You're doing it an A and we're doing an F or something? How does it go? I mean, what do you experience?
It's a good question, but it's 9 o'clock. So I'm saved. But it's a good question. But also, it might be an interesting question to turn back to you, because that very question is a grading. Is there, you know, what happens if you turn your attention back at yourself, and what's motivating? What's the feelings that are motivating that question? What's the
But you're the master here. I mean, you know it all, sort of.
Yes, but again,
I wonder if you could give us an insight in what you have accomplished.
But again, I want to demonstrate a little bit how the practice works. So the practice here would be, you turn back and feel that question in yourself. What are the feelings and emotions that are behind asking that question?
You haven't addressed yet your own experience.
Sorry?
You have not addressed yet your own experience.
So I'm avoiding answering the question for the time being. For the time being, I'm avoiding answering the question.
Okay.
And what I'm doing is taking the opportunity of your question to try to suggest a different approach, you know, kind of that's in line with what I did today, what I'm teaching in the class today. What happens if instead of focusing on your question and the answer to the question, you focus on where does that question come from inside of you?
It must be the Zen approach you're taking.
Is that okay?
That in itself teaches me something. The way you choose to answer my question shows me a little bit what one becomes. Meditates for many years and goes to the Buddhist.
Evasive and unself-revealing and aloof. I don't mind answering the question some other time, but it is 9 o'clock, so it just seems that
You know, but when we graduate, then we are ready.
If you get an A, then I'll tell you. And the thing is that when everyone takes this class, everyone gets an A. Thank you.